Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
Greetings, what is up? My name is Keith Schertz, and I am flying solo this week as we get ready for the game against the Mississippi State Bulldogs down in Starksville, Mississippi. Stark Vegas. Early morning game, been a long time since I remember being able to roll out of bed, essentially, and turn on the game. But that is our opportunity tomorrow, and that is very exciting prospect. Unless, of course, it's just another really depressing game and maybe blows up the rest of the day. But I think people are getting more and more numb to that. We've had enough of those now. We're getting practiced at that. Hopefully that is not the case with what happens against Mississippi State. I want to jump in right away. We want to talk about a couple things. First of all, Tanner Mangum is going to go again for the Cougars. He is going to be the starting quarterback. Joe Critchlow is going to get an opportunity to play, sounds like, unless Tanner Mangum, I guess, is successful when he goes out. But one of the things that I think is really important for people to remember, as we take a look at what this BYU football team has done this year, everyone is focused on the offense. And frankly, I think that's where the focus needs to go. I think people are right about that. The defense has been average. It's been below average. But it doesn't matter. The offense has been so atrocious. It just doesn't matter. What I want to talk a little bit about is this is something that I've identified, and I don't think has really been out there much for other people, but I think it's worth considering, and it's something for us to talk about, is that Ty Detmer is getting his game plans in, installing them, and having success early in games. And then as games continue, things fall apart for him. So let's talk a little bit about that. Looking at the situational stats for BYU this year in the passing game. In the first quarter, we'll just do completion percentage, right? It's 63.6%. with a touchdown and two picks. That's in the first quarter of the season through the first six games. In the second quarter, it goes down 5 percentage points, 58.5%, okay, with two touchdown passes, four INTs. And then in the third quarter, it drops from 58.5% all the way down to 50%. We're 21 for 42 on the season. That is a full 13.6 points below what they're performing in the first quarter, and that is for zero touchdowns, three INTs, and a quarterback rating of 65.91. That's after halftime. That's immediately after halftime when they have an opportunity to game plan things, go over things with the troops, and go back onto the field. And to me, that is a clear and obvious evidence that Ty Detmer is getting destroyed by the other sideline's defensive coordinator. That whatever adjustments he thinks are coming, whatever things are going to come their way, the other team's defensive coordinator is in front of it, and that's evidenced by the 50% completion rate, the zero touchdowns, the three picks, and a 65.91 passer rating. By the way, an average quarterback passer gets around 125 points. So again, that's like almost half that in quarterback rating. So it's atrocious what we're doing in the third quarter. Fourth quarter, actually a little bit worse. We go from 50% completion percentage all the way down to 43.3% completion percentage. We are 20% worse at completing passes in the fourth quarter than we are in the first quarter. A little more than 20%. That's an enormous drop-off as the game goes on. And the Cougars' efficiency and how they do as the game continues gets worse as the game goes along. So that's an important thing for, you know, us to be mindful of and to be, you know, aware of, is that as fans, you know, BYU, if they don't jump out and make it happen in the first quarter and have the rhythm in the first quarter, they are dead in the water this year. I looked back last year, similar trend. Not as steep. Jamal Williams helped hide a lot of the problems. The passing game wasn't very good last year either. But Jamal Williams could cover those things up by just handing him off the ball and making it go. So we've heard a lot from Kalani Sitake. Now, twice after losses, he's come out and said, this is about Ulatulata'u. And if he can run and really be effective, we just need to pound the rock with Ula. Maybe that's the game plan going forward. In fact, that seems to be the growing consensus. And we don't know if he's got the fitness to do it. He's just off his mission. He's a freshman. The problem with that is we're already down. So you can't keep running. There are going to be scenarios where you're going to have to make decisions to throw the football. And it's been illustrated this year. There's evidence of this last year. But as games go on, defensive coordinators catch up to what Ty Detmer's doing. They get that installed with their players, and suddenly the BYU offense can't throw. If you have a lead, maybe it's more doable to just keep pounding the rock. But if you're down by a couple touchdowns, it's not going to go very well, right? You can't keep running in those scenarios. And so this is a significant problem for this BYU football team. They have got to figure out how to move the ball early and score early in games. And if they can rush and make things happen early in games, that's the only way they can hang in there. They are a team with such a small margin for error that it's already at a point where if they get down a couple scores, it may be over. And that's going forward. I know they've played a tough schedule. I know they've had several games now against really talented teams. Like Utah State's the only team that's, you know, an FBS team, Division I, that, you know, you wouldn't say is kind of a class, like a high, you know, top 50 level program. Mississippi State is kind of a low-level Power 5. They're traditionally one of the lower-level teams in the SEC. But, of course, they have, you know, that win against LSU that caused reverberations amongst BYU fans as we were getting ready to play the Bulldogs. They destroyed Charleston Southern, an FCS team. They played Louisiana Tech and won by 36 points. So 5 touchdown difference between them and Louisiana Tech. And then they lost to Georgia big and they lost to Auburn big. So the LSU game is like the one game everyone's pointing at and saying, hey, that's the game that shows that Mississippi State has the talent. We like Nick Fitzgerald. He's a good quarterback. Darunya Wilson last year, we got to see him a couple times against the Cougars. I thought he was a dangerous wideout. Nick Fitzgerald's a lot better dual threat quarterback, and I thought that he did some things that were effective, but Kalani and Elisa Tuiaki did a good job trying to neutralize some of the stuff that the Bulldogs want to do. And so I do think we have an opportunity to go and to cause some problems for that offense. But tough stadium, Davis-Wade Stadium, they're going to have the cowbells out. We all famously are aware of those cowbells. I hope we don't get too beat up down there. You know, we all remember Luke Staley getting injured in 2001. If you're an older fan, you were around for then. But it's almost hard for me to focus on and give a real in-depth look into Mississippi State and talk about the things that Mississippi State does well and rate that, because again, we know this already, but BYU, you know, they don't do anything particularly well. They have a hard time being able to do much of anything particularly well. And so because of that, I mean, yeah, everyone's saying, you know, toss the ball to Ula, let Ula Tulatau pound the rock and everything, but, you know, he's averaging less than 5 yards a carry. He's a freshman. We don't know if he can carry a big workload. We don't know. We know that he battled an injury earlier in the year. But this is where we are. Unfortunately, that's where we're at. And that's kind of the great hope right now, is that those things come across. I can't explain why we can't throw the football. I just know that we can't. And I don't really see that changing in a significant way. I know that this statistic's well traveled, but I wanted to take a moment and talk about the fact that BYU has had 12 straight games now without passing for 200 yards or better in a game. 12 in a row against FBS opponents, failing to get to over 200 yards. This is regardless of the fact that we've never thrown for over 300 yards against any FBS opponent under Ty Detmer. 300 is a very good day at the office. 200, that's kind of an average day, right? It's maybe even a little below average. But we haven't gotten to that 200-yard mark for 12 games in a row against FBS opponents. So I decided to do a look into the teams that have had a consecutive streak of games. How many games in a row have they had without getting to that 200-yard threshold in the passing game? So the longest current streak right now is held by Army. 16 straight games being below 200 yards passing for them. The problem is that Army is an option team, and over that 16-game streak, they've averaged 9 pass attempts per game. Navy, they also, like the Cougars, 12 straight sub-200-yard passing games. You remember when we didn't want Ken Niumatalolo? Remember when a lot of fans didn't want that? And the reason was is we didn't want to suffer through the option and the inability to pass and how there's no pass game when you run the option. Navy's won a lot more games, and beyond that, they have been just as inept at passing as we are, except for the problem is they only throw it 9 times per game over that 12-game drought without a 200-yard passing game. 12 games is an enormous – by the way, that's an entire season. Right? You play 12 games in a season. This year we have 13 because we're going to Hawaii. But 12 games in a row, that's an entire season without getting to 200 yards passing. It's atrocious. We know BYU's at 12, sub-200-yard passing game. They do not run the option. They have been throwing the football 28.6 times per game. Georgia Tech, 8 games in a row, sub-200. They are an option team, 9.6 pass attempts per game. So you look at that, okay, and I decided, well, why don't we look into teams that don't run the option? So the next longest streak without 200-yard passings outside of BYU, that distinction goes to Charlotte, UNC Charlotte. Say it with me now. UNC Charlotte. I don't even know. I'm going to look it up right now. What is UNC Charlotte's mascot? The 49ers? They're the 49ers. I got to study some Charlotte, North Carolina history, I guess. But anyway, you have UNC Charlotte, okay? They have had 6 straight sub-200-yard passing games. They've been averaging 27.7 pass attempts per game. But their streak has been half as long as BYU's. The third longest streak by a team that does not run the option belongs to Rutgers. Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. They've only had 4. But again, among non-option teams, the third longest streak without a 200-yard passing game is only 4 games. BYU's at 12, 3 times as long. Rutgers is averaging 31.8 pass attempts per game. So that's a little higher than BYU's. To illustrate even further what the path is, just the path to get to 200 yards passing for BYU, they're averaging 28.6 pass attempts per game. So you take 200, divide that by 28.6, and that comes to 7 yards per attempt. 7 yards per attempt is all it takes in order to reach a 200-yard passing game when you throw it 28.6 times per game. Right now, in this college football landscape, there are 88 teams that average 7 yards per attempt or higher in their passing attacks. So 88, basically what we're saying is 88 other teams would definitely, because they're averaging it this year, they would get to 200 yards if they threw it 28.6 times per game. So all that is to say, the passing is really bad. The system within the passing is really bad. The inability to adjust and make those things go is, to me, the most crucial critique of Ty Detmer, even if it's a short-term, long-term. Everyone says be patient. I'm just not sure what patience does in order to fix those things other than an opportunity to learn on the fly and go through the growing pains and get there. But I don't know. How long do we wait? How long do we see if things go? You know, because if there's wins in the second half of the season and things seem to get better, well, is it because we're playing UMass? Well, sure. It's part of it. And if next year we have a few games against the major five conferences and things are rough again, well, then what? What do we do at that point? So it's hard to measure. You have to measure off of the things that we've already seen. And I think from the things that we've seen, there's a lot of data that indicates that the passing attack under Ty Detmer is not in its place. To wait and be patient for his guys to come through and to mature and to get ready and get fully comfortable with the pro system, you know, with the missions and how many kids you send on missions, you know, that's a 6-year. That's like a 6-year cycle that you have to give in order to give the full patience for him to have just one group of kids come through that are his guys. Well, is it fair to judge him off of just one group of his guys, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there has to come a bottom line to all this. And so the fact of the matter is you have to figure it out and make it go now. His play, I hate the notion of his players. He doesn't have his guys in yet. I hate that. Did he take the job? Then they're his guys. Like, part of why he chose to be at BYU is because the BYU kids were his kids then. Like, he wanted to be around them. He wanted to coach them. So I don't want to hear that he doesn't have the personnel. He doesn't have the guys. He chose to be here. And that brings us to the other really bad news. Not only is BYU 1-5, not only are they staring down the barrel of a cross-country trip to an SEC school that looks like they can play a little football, squarely looking at 1-6 with a follow-up road game against East Carolina, which everyone is assuming is a layup, but is anything a layup for this team at this point? I mean, we thought that we were just hiding our stuff from LSU when we played Portland State. Doesn't seem like we were just hiding our stuff. I think it was the signs of major, major flaws in this team. And I don't think there's a layup against anyone that's left on this schedule. Really don't. Really, really don't. But putting all that aside, there's the problem of recruiting, right? Because the patience going forward with recruiting, well, what they've done this season has clearly hurt them. Because they haven't had this bad of a recruiting week in years and years and years. Like, back to Gary Croton. Because this week, they lost Jaron Kump. Kump, offensive lineman, highly rated, 11th ranked recruit in the entire state, the 49th offensive tackle in the entire country. 6'6", 261 pounds. Could have been a great offensive lineman here. Lots of interest from several Pac-12 schools. He was a BYU kid. He was committed. Flipped to the University of Utah this week. Problem. Same time. Defensive lineman, David Fotu. He's a senior right now. It's class of 2018. He also flips. Goes from BYU to the University of Utah. Very talented defensive lineman. And then it compounds. Mika Tafua, consensus, every place out there, consensus four-star linebacker. You know who else was a consensus four-star linebacker? Fred Warner. Mika Tafua transfers. He got home from his mission in September and has taken the temperature of things and has flipped and is going to the University of Utah. So, problems. And a good friend, Matt Brown, national writer on SB Nation, author of the book What If, where he asks great questions about the history of college football and what if things went a different way and shook out a different way. Matt Brown wrote an awesome article on Vanquish the Foe, kind of apprising what Kalani Sitake's recruiting has looked like and has measured it against what Bronco Mendenhall has done recently. Now, a little bit of a small sample size on Kalani, but there's only, you know, 1 or 2 years, and maybe if you want to look at like class of 2019, because you can get some data on that. The point is that things haven't really gotten better under the great recruiter Kalani Sitake. But the problem now is that previous recruiting classes with consensus four-star, you know, recruits flipping and all of them going to the U. That's a massive problem. And Matt Brown argues on VanquishTheFoe.com in his article, he argues that is a more important and more critical thing that, you know, more critical result than anything else that might happen in the 2017 season. That starting to lose recruiting battles and have kids flip and go away, if this continues to happen with some of the top recruits, because right now we've lost 3 top recruits, if those things continue to happen, it's going to be really hard to kind of get things going in the right way. The good news is that we will continue to have unbelievable athletes and dancers as Cosmo the Cougar going forward. It seems that we've got that on lock. Things are turning out fine when it comes to finding great mascots that can really dance with the Cougarettes. Really, this should be Cougarettes cast. That would be a lot of fun. I would love to do Cougarettes cast. We've done a couple episodes on the Cougarettes. But, you know, we always have great people in for Cosmo. I don't know, maybe we need to contact the coach who's in charge of the Cosmo team and figure out where he's finding these kids. Get some tips about locating talent. Fun fact, Tosh McIntosh's grandpa was Cosmo the Cougar when he was in college. So, I told you that one was fun. That was a really fun one. Here's a short conversation about the role of experience for coaching staffs. You know, one of the things that we keep hearing is just this group is inexperienced. They don't have any you know, experience in this. They've never been in that. They're kind of all learning on the fly. And that the experience is a problem, but they will pick those things up. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, just a real practical sense of experience and what that means, is that, you know, Kalani Sitake, his experience, and he's the most experienced coach on our staff in kind of high-level roles. Kalani Sitake was mentored by Kyle Whittingham and Gary Anderson. But Kyle Whittingham is not going to be doing anything to try to be helping Kalani. And the way Kalani left things with Gary Anderson in Oregon State didn't really rub Gary Anderson the right way. And now, Lavelle Edwards has passed away. You know, we used to hear stories about how Bronco Mendenhall had a good relationship with Urban Meyer and could pick Urban Meyer's brain if you'd like, and how he went and helped out at the University of Oregon. And so he made connections with Chip Kelly and Mike Bellotti and some really good coaches. And had the ability to maybe use other coaches as a reference. You go on down the line, right? Reno Mahe, where's his connections? Well, he doesn't have any. He hasn't worked under anybody, right? He hasn't observed somebody else do the job. Ben Cahoon's only been at BYU, and he was fired. He was let go the time before. The point is these guys don't really have, you know, the sage advice, the guru that they can go to. Like, none of them. I've been curious about what that means and how that has looked for them, because I know that I've been able to lean on people who have been through hard scenarios that are similar to mine and go to them and pick their brain and get some good advice and ideas. And I guess what I'm wondering is like, what's the circle of knowledge? What is the base for our coaching staff to use to lean on for other people? You know, we could say Andy Reid. I guess you could say Andy Reid. He seems to be friendly and, you know, have good feelings about BYU. I think he's probably a little busy with the Chiefs. He might be willing to take the call or whatever, but I don't, you know, I guess maybe there's one. The point is I think that is one of the, you know, problems with the experience thing is that tree of influence and resources that they can go to from people that they learn from is bare. They don't have people that they can go to handle those things. And that is something that they, you know, I don't know how you solve that. That really is just a patience thing. And it's one of the consequences of having an inexperienced team. And now we've lost 5 in a row. And that's a problem. If we lose the 6th in a row, by the way, it'll be the first time BYU's lost 6 games in a row since 1942. So if they lose to Mississippi State, you'll get to see something for the first time since 1942. That's 75 years in the making. I only bring up all this because I think it's interesting to have an actual real appraisal of the program and be passionate about it and still care. The apathy towards this program has been kind of amazing. You know, we've been really spoiled as fans of BYU for a long time. I mean, we had a couple bad years with Gary Croton, but overall, like, very spoiled for a very long time. And, you know, since it, what, at least, like, what, 76? I feel like Gifford Nielsen was slinging it. Like, I think that there's a chance that, you know, the BYU fans are just very, they're like anybody. It's been tough to watch, and it's hard. I think most fans would feel some apathy the way that we feel. I'm curious, you know, I'm definitely getting up and watching the game and going to rewatch it and try to see what I can see. But I don't know. I'm getting the feeling just through some of my interactions with other people is that 10 o'clock SEC Network. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to bother to find the channel. I don't have it in my package. Not a big deal. I'm not going to go to friends. I'm not going to figure out how to watch it. Almost, you know, it's fait accompli. And that's the problem, is that apathy part is the problem that should really, really be worrying Tom Holmo. Because that's a part that can't be acceptable. Like, the two things that I think can be the most unacceptable things for the athletic department at BYU is, first, obviously, if there's problems with honor code and crime and just, like, bad behavior at a school like BYU, where the athletics program has been clearly stated to be part of a PR and marketing and an opportunity to get exposure for the church, to have any sort of press about lewd, illicit behavior or things against the honor code, potentially, that to me is probably the most fatal thing that could happen. But the second thing would be apathy, the growing apathy among fans towards its most important sport is one thing that you would really want to have your radar up about. And we're approaching maximum apathy. And I think that they have this week, like, people expect Mississippi State to go one way. But it's that East Carolina game. Before the season, before I knew we were bad, I was nervous about East Carolina. I thought that going and playing an SEC school on the road, coming home from that, then going on the road again to go play East Carolina, I thought that that was going to be a tough ask. East Carolina is terrible against the pass. That's like the thing that they can't do, but we can't pass. So we can't even expose the thing that they're not good at. At least it feels that way as of now. All right, I've given you 30 minutes of stuff to think about, largely negative, but I think there's no way to spin it. Everybody's been bad. Things are not good. And that's just the way it is right now as it relates to BYU football. I promise you when the days are good, and they will be good someday, that you will be like, wow, these guys are like crazy and so happy and excited about it. But just remember, we're here cranking out, grinding you the thoughtful, researched, intense evaluations of everything that's going on with that BYU football team, even when things are at its darkest. And so with that, I will say, go Cougars. I hope they shock the freaking world. I hope they come out and it's like Tanner Mangum, you know, can go out there and just start slinging it like wild. That Tanner is doing the things that made us all so excited about him. You know, I think the dip in his yards per attempt on throwing is just like, it's like shocking. It's jarring. It hasn't happened to another BYU quarterback ever where things have gone down and gotten worse. Right now he's averaging 5.1 yards per attempt. You remember earlier when I said in order to get to 200 yards passing, we need to have 7 yards per attempt, you know, and then throw, you know, whatever it was, 27 times. Like, if they throw that and have him out there, they ought to get to 200 yards, right? 28.6 times. So if they throw 29 times and you average 7 yards per attempt, you're going to get to 200 yards. Tanner Mangum is a freshman, averaged 7.6 yards attempt. He was top 40 in America that year in yards per attempt. In efficiency, he was one of the top 25 quarterbacks in America as a freshman, fresh off of Mission, running Robert and I's system. Last year, in limited work because he was behind Taysom, he threw 7.3 yards an attempt. This year, he's like, he's dead last in yards per attempt. 5.1, 93 quarterback rating. This is as bad of quarterback play as we've seen in a while. And I don't know if he got rattled by the stuff that happened for him off the field. I don't know if he got rattled and had his confidence killed when he lost the quarterback battle. And his whole life he'd been the guy and the best. And that shook him up emotionally and mentally. I can't tell you what's going on. I think there is definitely something happening with Tanner there. And we know that he's definitely not totally healthy. And we know that. He didn't look totally healthy. But he is still going to go against Mississippi State. And one last thing. Joe Critchlow, you know, everybody was like freaking out. Oh, well, we burned his red shirt. This is a preferred walk-on. He graded fourth. He was behind, and you, maybe he is better than Coy Detmer Jr. But then the question is then if he was better, then what the heck? That's got to be a critique of the coaching staff again. Why was Joe Critchlow behind Coy Detmer Jr.? So I just think, you know, you look at Joe Critchlow, and a lot of people are saying, well, maybe he's going to be better than Mangum. Like, I will be, listen, it will be the biggest shock in my lifetime. If he's better, but if he ends up being better than Mangum, then you have to say that Mangum has crumbled somehow mentally. And then secondly, you would then have to concede that the coaching staff does not have a freaking clue. And so I'm curious to see, but it's just crazy that Joe Critchlow, most of BYU fans did not even know who Joe Critchlow was before the Utah State game. And now a lot of them are really, like Tosh, are very, very high on Joe Critchlow and that he is going to make a massive difference in the destiny of this team. We're going to win games with Joe Critchlow on the center instead of Tanner Mangum. It's a fascinating year. And really, that just shows you the grasping at straws and looking just anywhere to try to have anything that potentially leads us to success. And you've got to try all sorts of different things to try to make those things, you know, work. And I guess if that's Joe Critchlow, we should give him a chance, because certainly Tanner isn't playing well. So, oh my gosh. Wow. So, handling the Bulldogs is tough enough. I love their Bulldog that's on the sideline. I hope we get several shots from the SEC Network of the mascot for Mississippi State. I just love the Bulldog. He's adorable. He's adorable. He probably snores when he sleeps, you know, and he probably smells, you know, sometimes. But that's okay. I have a French Bulldog, personally, and he's great. But that English Bulldog they use at Mississippi State, one of my favorite mascots in all of college football. So, BYU fans, it's bleak. Let's hope for the best. Really, what we're looking for is just little steps of improvement. And even if they lose and are unable to cover the spread, which is, I think it's a little over 24. And so if they're able to cover the spread for the first time this season, let's consider that a win. There should be a little celebration at home. If we're able to pass for 200 yards in a game, that should be seen as a massive accomplishment. If we complete higher than 43% of our passes in the fourth quarter, you know, maybe that's... They're little victories. We got to look for little victories at this point. And I can't freaking believe that that's where BYU football is. But hey, it's 2017 and things are weird. Go Cougars! Surprise the world! And for fans, we'll continue to try to keep our energy up and our enthusiasm for BYU football. Better days will be back someday. Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games and go Cougars!